This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to One Hot Take. I'm your host, Blake Howard. This is One Heat Minute Productions' new release show, this is one of our last episodes of the year that we're talking a new release, and it feels like when a Rian Johnson movie comes out, it deserves to be talked about to me. And so when I was looking around, what I do, some people may know, is I stalk the letterbox of my friends and peers and see who's into a movie, who's got an interesting take, and genuinely, one of the best who's ever done it posted a hilarious screen grab of really bad captioning that had basically butchered one of the quotes of the entire movie and was interacting with Rian Johnson, the director of Wake Up Dead Man. And that is the legendary film writer, film commentator, filmmaker, screenwriter, Drew McWeeny. Hello, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
How are you?
Thank you. What an intro. Thank you so much.
I feel like now, because of podcasting across from your country and often in the sleepless hours of my nights or mornings and you guys being awake, it's the perfect time to say, here's the trailer for Wake Up Dead Man, which is exactly what I feel like podcasting from Australia to so many of my American and London friends. Wake Up Dead Man is Rian Johnson's latest in the Knives Out series. It's on Netflix. Listen to the trailer, and then Drew and I are going to come back and talk all about it.
You're the only one on stage with the Monsignor at the time of his killing. You're the only one at that church who hated his guts.
The spirit really moved him today, huh?
So tell me,
what the hell happened?
Everyone thinks I did it. I didn't do it.
This goes way beyond normal police work. This is something even I have not experienced. A perfectly impossible crime.
This case is solvable, right?
Well, I'm incapable of not solving a crime. So you'll see. It's fun.
Wicks had a vast family fortune.
If made public, can ruin people.
God forbid.
It is time to discover what this flock of wicked wolves is hiding.
There's some Scooby-Doo shit going on here.
Scooby-Doo-Doo. With all the pieces on the table, this crime appears impossible.
These kids painting rocket ships all over his sacred resting place.
Okay, I know for a fact that the trailer does a pretty damn good job of like setting up the twisty bramble that Rian Johnson has become particularly brilliant at crafting in this series. The third in the series, I want to go right out on a limb in the spirit of One Hot Take and say, Drew, I think this almost instantly became my favorite of the series.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it was so beautifully crafted. I think that Josh O'Connor, who's the star as Father Duplantis, was amazing. I think that Daniel Craig has really completely settled like into the scrumptious outfits and drawl of Benoit Blanc. I think that the supporting cast is hilarious and fantastic. Glenn Close, Josh Brolin, Mila Kunis, Jeremy Renner, Andrew Scott, Kerry Washington. It was a movie that was such an entanglement and an interrogation of faith. It has all of the things that you have in these mysteries, but it was asking much deeper questions that I found that like really resonated. Like, what I loved about The Glass Onion is how vacuous and empty a lot of those characters were.
Oh, yeah.
But what I loved about even more about Wake Up Dead Man is the burden and the trauma and these people seeking solace in religion that ultimately get entangled in this. And as far as aesthetically, it's one of the best. It's so good looking and so purposefully constructed and almost in a lo-fi kind of way, tactile. And I just loved it to pieces. Tell me what you thought of Wake Up Dead Man.
I'm with you. I thought it was a terrific piece of entertainment. And I think right now we live in a, especially if you are unfortunately in America now, we live in a very post-truth society.
Yes.
Where truth does not matter. It is whose narrative wins.
Yeah.
And I don't think any movie more perfectly captures that moment than Wake Up Dead Man, where it's all about the war of narratives. The entire reason that Judd is sent to this small church is to try to seize the narrative back from Monsignor Wicks, played by Josh Brolin, who is so good at creating fear as a reason for you to follow him. Give people enough of something they hate and tell them it's going to take away something they love, and then they will follow you. And that is this movie. We see this guy, and we see how attuned he is to this particular group of followers and their damage, and knows how to play each of them like a fiddle. And so it's very much a case of Judd, who is absolutely telling the truth and who is a person who has come to this community with open arms and trying to find a way to reach these people, running up against this other narrative that has been established. And then Benoit Blanc comes in, and his whole job in this movie is to untangle those narratives. And I think there's something really beautiful about that. I think that it is the great task we have ahead of us as a culture is to figure out a way back to truth as an actual North Star.
Yes. Facts.
And
facts.
Yeah, just facts. Just things that are real.
Yeah.
Should be the things that dominate the conversation, but they are rarely the things that dominate the conversation. And I think this movie is so keen at the way it examines the way narratives and myths are established and why. How does a myth become embedded in our culture? How does a lie become the truth? And I think this movie does a great job of analyzing that. Each of these movies, each of these Knives Out movies, are very keenly socially aware. Like, they are movies that are about particular types of people and the harm they are doing. And so in the first one, it's these old money families and the way they not only fuck each other up, but then fuck up the world around them. In Glass Onion, it is all about venture capital monsters and sort of that that nonstop absorption of everything for them. And I think this is the one that I feel like hits its target most directly. I know my 17-year-old, when he saw it, his first reaction was, well, that's the best movie about Catholicism I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. That's the whole thing in
that's
a movie.
That's the whole box and dice,
And I love that that's something you can take away from it. I also think the cast in this one, Josh Brolin's on fire this year.
Good Lord. Josh Brolin is so funny. He's so funny in this movie. He's so menacing. He's such an aggressor. And you can see that even in his most malevolent... the most malevolent moments, though, he's intoxicating. You can't take your eyes off him. You're hanging on every word. He's got that to a T. There's
little power games with Judd, like the confession about masturbation.
Oh my God!
And the way he makes him wallow in it and just listen to every deep. I was doing that thing with my hand that I like, where I hold it upside down. It just holy God!
I was just gonna say. He takes how those scenes weren't corpsed, because he's clearly just like riffing on some, how do I say, the most awful and thing that's going to distract him. And poor Josh O'Connor, to his credit as a great actor, and them and like watching it happen, is just sitting there like, oh, not again. Like, I've heard this so many times. So brilliant.
I love Josh O'Connor, man. And I love the year he's having.
I have only seen three of the four now.
Okay,
I saw Rebuilding.
Which ones have you seen?
I saw Rebuilding, which is magnificent. I saw The Mastermind, Kelly Reichardt's Mastermind, which I think he's absolutely excellent in as well. Fantastic movie. Speaking of a movie about taking a genre and fusing it over a very socio-politically charged era, even though the protagonist has no idea that they're operating in such an era, has its own brilliant take. And then I've seen this. I haven't seen the last one.
History of Sound.
History of Sound. I haven't seen
History of Sound. Is wonderful as well. It's another great Mescal performance. Yeah. O'Connor's the heart of that movie, though.
Yeah.
I love him. I love this sort of, I love the fact that he's perpetually rumpled.
Yeah.
It does not look like you could iron Josh O'Connor's clothes. They would just rumple the moment you put back onto him. I think it was La Camera that I saw that was
what a movie.
Who is that guy?
What a movie.
Like that guy.
Yeah.
And I think he's on fire right now. It does not surprise me that Spielberg made him the everyman in the next UFO thing, because I feel like this is the guy who in the 70s would have worked incessantly because of how normal he seems.
Yes. But when you look at something like La Chimera framed against some of all those other things, you're like, oh, he's also got that weird thing, that supernatural something weirdness that he can access apart from being so grounded and normal and challenges. And it's like, you look at the murderer's row that's on his resume this early in his career. It's like, it's kind of Adam Driver had it. There's been a couple of big actors preceding him.
I feel like directors start to whisper to each other.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I saw this guy. You got to see him. You got to get him in your room. You got to meet this guy. Like it feels like there's an excitement, and artists can't help but just pass this guy around. Try him. Look, yeah, it's amazing.
Try him in your thing. I'm sure he's great. It's like, that's what's funny about like the whole Adam Driver thing is like Scorsese going like, I think he might be the best actor in his generation. And then like bang, bang, bang. Like you just see him he's in 10 movies with all these guys. So I think he's really excellent. And I want to credit, because this is ultimately a Rian Johnson and Daniel Craig joint that they've just conjured together. He's so good in this one. He is Daniel Craig. And last night, it's Christmas, Drew, so I have to watch The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And that's my Black Christmas, one of our Black Christmas movies, our little film club on One Heat Minute. We pick four a month, and in our Bloody Christmas selection, they are L.A. Confidential, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Long Kiss Goodnight, and then I think we've got A Christmas Story is taking up the tail there. But every Christmas where we watch, in my house anyway, watch The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and I'm just like, man, this guy is truly, I mean, he's beyond James Bond, which is obviously such a huge seminal performance, but it's like beyond James Bond, this guy's an actor. He's so good. Just give him these meaty roles and work with great directors and he will deliver. Like, he's a guy, if you can deliver for Fincher, you can deliver for anyone.
Well, I feel like he's Steve McQueen with more range.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I love McQueen, but McQueen is such a narrow thing. You cast McQueen a certain way.
Yeah, that's who you're going to get.
Whereas I feel like Craig has the same kind of movie star charisma. There is a grizzled sort of sun leathered thing that he has going on where you look at his face and there's angles where he kind of looks like a thumb, and then there's angles where he's the most attractive man you've ever seen, and that's phenomenal. I love that about an actor, where their face is just different depending on where you're looking at them. But I think Craig takes risks that guys like McQueen never could, because they were very worried about movie star ego. Very few of them would have followed up James Bond with Queer.
Yeah, exactly.
And pulled it off and made a movie that was genuinely riveting. And I think Craig loves to, there's a character actor at heart in there, even though he is a movie star by DNA.
Yeah.
And so I think he likes disappearing into things. I love the choice for Benoit's voice.
Yeah.
Because it's a cartoon.
Yeah.
First time you hear him, you're like, oh, Foghorn Leghorn. Like, just straight up Foghorn Leghorn.
Straight up to the point where you get an actor in the first movie to go, hey, Foghorn Leghorn, what is this?
And you acknowledge, okay, that's a big accent he's doing.
It's
and
big.
He's doing it in such a big way. I feel like it's Columbo's rumpled raincoat.
Yeah.
In that it is meant to disarm you. When you hear him coming, you're like, oh, I can outsmart this guy. Listen to him.
He sounds like a complete dope. Even in Glass Onion, there's that great moment. He's like, do we get a prize if we sell this? You get an iPad. Ooh, we get an iPad. Exciting. You know, it's just like, of course, this guy's a dope.
I love that. I love that he disarms you with the sort of the presentation of Benoit Blanc. And then I love the way they've established little character things, but they're doing it so slowly that you're not getting any exposition dumps about Benoit. But we know now that he and his mother had a difficult relationship.
Yeah.
That it was religious based. My guess is it's about his identity as a gay man.
Yeah.
And the fact that he had to leave where he lived in order to go be who he is baked into him. We don't ever hear him lay all that out, but over the course of these films, we're picking up little things. And
his father was a policeman, a detective. And it was like, oh, okay.
So
this
is
the hostility, the vein of hostility for police officers throughout as well is interesting.
So I think it's great that there's real character work going on. He is not simply a blank who comes in and solves crimes.
Yeah.
There is a character that they are building, but they're doing it slowly and they're doing it carefully and they're doing it through the way he interacts with the mysteries themselves. Great writing, great smart writing. And I think Benoit has so much juice in him. There's so many of these you could keep making.
Oh yeah.
And I love the distinction in Ryan's head. This is part of what I find so interesting about Ryan is he's very meta aware of, you know, our relationships with these texts and with, you know, the mystery genre in general. Poker Face was such a great exercise in, again, mystery writing and a character who drives everything through their superpower of calling bullshit on people.
Ana de Armas, I'd forgotten almost, but Ana de Armas was like, she throws up every time she tells a lie.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, there it is. You can start to see.
You can see how that idea seeded into Poker Face.
Yes.
And Poker Face was so much fun, but now he has the idea of completely revamping it and having Peter Dinklage come in and play Charlie and then do 2 years like that and then do somebody else. I'm down with that. That sounds fun, and it sounds like an experiment and a different way to do it. But I love that with Benoit Blanc, it is Daniel Craig or it is nobody.
Yeah.
That's it. Benoit is his. I like that. I like that for character, Ryan has a partner who he really wants to be part of it all the way through.
And I love that they challenge each other because they're like, until we find the next gem that is at the heart of this script or this next tale and this next wrinkle, not only for the beautiful ensemble that just like rolls in and has a blast together for, you know, a few weeks that they're shooting this movie or like pops in for a week and jumps out again. But it's not just that. It's we need to be pushing ourselves. And if we push ourselves, we can invite others into play. And once we're ready to go, that's when we're ready. And I love that he's got that because then it's like, you know, someone you trust and love deeply and work with so closely, like going like, we don't have it yet. And you believing them is like the greatest gift for a creative person. So I love that. Yeah. We don't have it yet. We're getting there, but we don't have it yet.
I also think his casting is so smart because yes, these are all-star casts and you know, it's exciting to see these people together, but it never feels to me like he's just picking them because they're a flavor of the moment or because they are, he is so careful with how he casts these. I think Glenn Close is phenomenal in this movie.
Yeah, awesome.
I think Thomas Hayden Church is a quiet titan in this movie. There's very little he does, but man, he is such a heart and soul center of what happens to everybody, or because of everybody. Like, he sells that decency and that kindness in a way, and I love that it's Thomas Hayden Church. It's a great use of him.
Yeah. It's and Kaylee Spenny.
Kaylee Spenny. Yeah.
Oh my man, she is good. She's in this movie, and and quite MVP of like the movie nearly steals the whole thing from everyone. Jeffrey Wright, just bring in Jeffrey Wright for 4 minutes and see Felix Leiter and James Bond next to each other in a movie again, and all of your soul is satiated for the year is like those two guys standing next to each other on the screen for a minute
together,
or two.
Yeah.
Oh wow, they're good together.
And there is really nothing better than Jeffrey Wright in a priest collar swearing.
No. There's like, not.
I'm
sorry, guys. Jeffrey Wright can do basically anything, but particularly in this, going, oh, this fucking guy. Like,
listen, it's a well-known secret that Deacon Chambers is a dick. So, love it so much.
Oh, it's excellent. This is really fun. I genuinely want to say, like, it's available everywhere on Netflix. All three Knives Out movies are there together, so you can go back and relish it. I found myself watching Wake Up Dead Man, immediately put on Knives Out. I will probably revisit Glass Onion before the year's end just because I feel like it. And then I'm going to double back on Wake Up Dead Man again. And I didn't get a chance to watch it with my wife, but I'm going to check it out with her. We've watched the others together.
I've seen it twice now, and the second time was to take my girlfriend and let her just
ruminate,
bask in it.
And yeah.
Yeah, it's it. And my favorite thing about seeing it a second time, Do it when you watch it. Now you know the solution.
I know the solution.
You know what happened. Watch closely. He doesn't cheat.
Yeah.
He shows you everything before he tells you.
Yes.
So there's scenes like when somebody turns around, there's a thing that you see, and sure enough, it's where he said it was.
Yeah.
And I love that. I think that's, it's very fun when you look at one of these things and you go back and you can still have fun with the construction of it the second time because you're watching now how he misled you.
Yes.
And you're like, ah, that fucker didn't cheat. I can't even be mad because it's right there.
It's right there. And also shout out to Noah Segan for just always being in these.
The best. I love the use of him in all three. I love that, you know,
the sycophantic junior cop, the like random guy who lives on the island in Glass Onion. And just the bar owner in this one. I just love him. I love that his buddies are there. And I have heard, and I don't know if we want to tell them, Drew, but there is apparently a Joseph Gordon-Levitt cameo in this movie.
There is. Just like the last film, it's the weirdest kind of cameo.
Yeah, the weirdest. But also, can I just say, I love that these guys who all had such a formative experience making Brick and meant a lot to each other, and then obviously went on to make Looper together, which I think is like the third best Terminator movie by far. It's like the third best one in that whole series, even though it's not technically part of it. But yeah, I love the way that Rian Johnson makes movies, and I love that he makes them with such care and love in this kind of genre. But I think that what he started to really touch on in this series, as you said so beautifully at the beginning, Drew, was like that they're about things and they're about moments in time and they're about people and they're not afraid to be engaged with what we're doing right now. But they don't seem to fall in the traps of making themselves so hyper-specific that they can't be enjoyable.
They're not lectures.
They're not lectures. You're right.
Yeah. But they are beautifully attuned to the moment. And I do think he is, when we're done with this generation of filmmakers, I think Ryan's going to be one of those guys that we look back at as a just consistent giant.
Yes.
A dude who knows exactly what he's doing, who crafts his movies very specifically and intentionally, and yet there's joy and there's fun and there's spontaneity in them. And I think he's getting better as he goes. And I wouldn't say that about everybody.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, look, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate you.
My pleasure, man. Have the best. Always good to see you, Blake.
Great to see you too. You have the best holidays with those beautiful boys and your little family there. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And if you haven't seen it, it's just going to be waiting on Netflix for you one summer night. You don't know what to watch. Put on Wake Up Dead Man. Enjoy.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.